AI and automation are two of the most significant buzzwords in the realm of ad tech. In this special episode of AW360, part one of a four-episode miniseries in partnership with Fluency, we will delve into the current state of these transformative technologies and their future trajectories. By gaining a thorough understanding of their development and potential, you will be equipped to make informed strategic decisions and investments. This knowledge will empower you to effectively shape and optimize your revenue technology stack, ensuring you stay ahead in a rapidly evolving industry. To kick off this podcast miniseries, today I'll be speaking with Eric Mayhew, co-founder and president, as well as chief product officer at Fluency. Eric, welcome back to the show. This is actually your second appearance on the podcast, as we last had you on in April of last year. To get things started, can you give us an overview of what Fluency is all about?
Thank you, Richard, for having me back. It's been a little bit. I hope I didn't discourage you the last time we were on this call. But obviously, not bad enough where you didn't have me back. I hope this one is the best one, or at least the start of the series that we're going to do together. When it comes to Fluency, we'll just kind of go with something a little ethereal in concept. If you want to just put it into a phrase, we are an ad operations operating system. And that's kind of a weird thing. It's a nebulous term. And if you are a software purist, you might argue that it is not an operating system. We'll kind of put that away, because I think if you look at those four words together, that's the best description we can come up with what Fluency is. It is truly an all-encompassing platform for us to help streamline ad operations and the ad management, the entire job cycle that we do as advertisers. We've come from a place where we actually were the advertising agency. This is previous life. We were in the largest tier three automotive agency. We grew that and built that space. We ran into many, many pitfalls and challenges that we saw there that really made it so that we had to throw a lot of people, resources, labor at tedium, things that just shouldn't be there in the space. So through that experience, we looked for opportunities, and we continue to do so today as Fluency, for ways that we can be an operations automation engine and a rules engine. I mean, that's that at the core, automation and rules. If you looked at any one of these agencies, and I had mentioned that we were in the tier three automotive space, there are patterns that you can find. Every one of luxury brand X should look and feel similar, although bespoke to that individual dealership location. That's kind of the start of the impetus of saying, hey, if there are patterns in your client base, which I think we would all agree that there's some patterns in our client base, there should be some ways that we can take advantage of those patterns in our execution and operations, rather than doing bespoke every time that we touch the keyboard. The focus of the platform is definitely on time savings. Now, there's always the argument of, are these ad platform tools really built for micro optimizations, reducing a CPC, or getting the lowest cost per lead? And I would say that is a intentional but indirect byproduct of time savings. I'll kind of give you a backstory for me. When I was ready to leave that agency, I actually interviewed with an audience company, and I spent an entire day with them, and I loved the product that they had. And I thought about how amazing those audiences were. And this is around 2017. And I'm thinking to myself, all right, I would love to work on this audience piece. I believe in what they're doing. And right at the very end, I kind of got to the point of saying to myself, oh my gosh, I've just lived the other side. And I asked the CEO there, and I said, how many times do you bring these audiences to your agencies and they just never implement them? And he says, oh, Eric, it's all the time. It always happens. And I said, oh, I know why that is. You've got an advertiser that you're representing as an agency. You make a couple hundred dollars a month potentially, and they don't even like paying you that. That couple hundred dollars is a couple of hours. You've got to manage all their specials and update their ad content and ensure that their negative keyword targets are right and that their geos are proper. And then you've got to get on the phone with them and show them the performance reports. You've got a lot of things to do. So bringing best practices like these additional audiences, which I love, it's actually a great story, just erodes the margin even more. It helps the end advertiser, so it's a great thing to do. It's very difficult for the agency to shoulder that when they've got so many other things on them. So my statement was, instead of coming to work on the audiences, I'm going to really focus my passions, my energies, and my efforts on solving that other side. Let me make it so that the updating specials is easier, so you have more time to do audiences, or even make it so it's easy to get those audiences routed through. So it's really about taking rules and best practices, turning them into like a system set of rules where you actually can automate all of that. So, you know, for our success, if I can return back to any one of our partners, similar performance early in the, in our life cycle, but at lower investment and labor costs for them, similar performance, lower investment costs, I think that's a win, because from that point forward, you can get into those longer tail pieces that really drive that performance. So rather than performance, labor savings is really the focus for the platform, and performance comes as a natural byproduct of that.
One of the things we're going to be discussing a lot is AI and automation. I mean, that's one of the core things of discussion in this series. So one of the things I'd like to do just to kind of set the stage here is discuss core concepts. Of particular interest to marketers, at least from what I've seen, and I get this a lot through Advertising Week events and through, you know, our content channels, is discussion around automations. You guys work with automations. What are some key work streams that marketers can be automating today?
I don't mean to have too long-winded an answer for you here, but I'm going to kind of take you through a journey. There's this phrase that I have listened for. I've been in the space for 17 years, building software, working in the agency world, like trying to find solutions to these automation challenges. And there's this one phrase that I key in on, and I love it. And if anybody ever wants to say it to me, I will listen and I will love what you say. But that phrase is, why can't we just? Like, when you hear that, why can't we just? It is the spark for anything that you want to automate after that. And I hear it a lot. If you have a product feed, why can't we just get it to create an ad group for every one of these products? Easy example, right? Let's just use that as a basic example. Say in that product feed, I had a price. Like, I know how much I make as far as margin on each of those products. Why can't we just use that value to drive our target ROAS? Those are types of things that I would hear a lot in this space. And they're obvious and practical. And I think that's the great thing. Like, automation can sound like some mysterious thing or some high-tech solution, but it really isn't. It's really about mechanizing these very obvious things that we all do, rather than have to sit there and click buttons and type things in all the time. I had mentioned product data as an example. You'll notice if you're doing any multi-channel advertising, Google and Microsoft and Facebook, and you're somewhere on a DSP and you've got some YouTube ads out there or something like that, and you're in that space, anchoring on a centralized data set allows you to automate so much. It allows you to actually not only automate, because you're using data to power your decisioning in advertising, that's a great start, but also allows you to align those different ad networks in great spots that they play their role best. DSP, generally, if you think about that, isn't your final lead generator. Oftentimes it's demand generation. So it's not lead capture, it's demand generation. So if you wanted to have that set up and you wanted to say, I am focused on these primary products, these are my high revenue driving products, awesome. You can get your DSP side automated to really talk about those products. And then you can get your demand capture, things like your paid search, which are like those lower funnel activities, to be ready to receive that message. So what you put out for feeder and what you put out for harvester can be aligned when you do this. So this is where automation comes in. So I think this is a really powerful story to align the different parts of the advertising ecosystem. It's not just one thing. I think we've seen examples of this everywhere. And if we're really honest with ourselves with automation, it's existed from the onset of digital marketing. None of us have to go in and directly bid on an auction for a search. None of us have to go buy a specific placement at a specific time in the DSP world. Those are all automations. They've run for a long time. You pre-configure something and it goes ahead and it does those things that you asked it to. Google will say, I'm going to respect your target CPC or whatever bid strategy you're on, and I'm going to go buy for you. That's an automation. It's expanded a lot in the last few years. I think around 2018 was when Google's smart bidding came out. Meta has similar concepts. Microsoft has all the similar concepts. So those smart bidding elements have been around for a while, and they are definitely a part of automation as well. And even more so, like, it's right in the title, auto apply recommendations, the Google AARs, and there's the Microsoft equivalent of those types of things. Those are automations as well. So it's not like the space is new. It's not like it's totally unheard of. But back to your point, like, what would we automate, right? So if you have a core philosophy in your operations and you have a business value, you know, for example, that if you saw a low margin product with a high cost per conversion, you're going to check your negative keywords. You're going to review your targeting and bidding. You're going to make sure it's in line with your value per conversion. Like, we do that as advertisers. We know how we attack it. And we might have a secret sauce that's just ours for our agency or our brand. And if you know that, If you can actually articulate it and say, this is how we address that problem, then you can absolutely automate it. And I think it applies almost everywhere in the ad operations space. How you update your ad copy based on short-term specials and deals, how you optimize your targeting, how you correct for underpacing budgets. These are all things that you have philosophies on. And there's parts that reach into the downstream effects of this too. As an example, how you build your client reporting. I have seen so many times where advertisers will go and screenshot different components and throw it in a PowerPoint deck and stitch these things together, but do it over and over and over again. And those concepts are all automatable. How you make your budget recommendations absolutely should be formulaic and numerically driven and automatable. And then how you distribute that information back to the teams that need it, both internal teams and external teams, if there are some. That's all great for automation, because the alternative to automation is manual effort to do all those things that just seem very, very obvious that we should all be doing.
You kind of touched on this a little bit by just bringing up Facebook. And one of the things I'm always curious about when it comes to anything like Facebook is, Facebook's a walled garden. We all know this. A whole different beast in a way. What are the challenges or the differences between automating in channel through a walled garden versus using a centralized automation platform?
That's a great question. And there's definitely a space for both, in my opinion. So I would never paint an us or them, or certainly not an us versus them. It's very much a complementary system of automations. Generally, what I see in engine, you know, in the walled garden automations, is that they're going to be around numerical performance. And candidly, they're probably going to be driving a lot to their maximum yield. When you look at the way that the Google auction works, as an example, it's really going to try to figure out how to monetize each one of those possible impressions, because that's what they have. Even though that we bid per click, take that, run it through the click-through rate, run it through the ad performance type metrics. You can really distill it down to, how much am I going to make for every one of these impressions? Is this a good ad for me to do as Google to make this happen? That's one side of the equation, but you're going to give it some boundaries and you're going to give it numerical bounds for it to operate in. The one thing that it doesn't really account for is kind of that world that sits outside the numbers. And that's by design. I don't think that they really want to be in this space. If I was to look at a brand will have brand guidelines. If I was to look at certain verticals like Fair Housing Act, those things all give us this governance and rule systems that we have to express somewhere. And that's not just in the numbers of performance. I see these as very complementary solutions. One is about configuring the systems, getting the content management up to date, setting up the rules and the governance around what we're going to allow them to automate and boundaries around what they're going to automate. Like we talked about earlier, smart bidding is one of those major things in the automation. The AARs are one of those things in automation. Knowing which things we can accept and reject is in that governance world. And that's what I think a lot of the stuff that we here at Fluency, myself included, over the last 7-8 years have really focused on is, how do we make this safe? In engine, there's a competitive advantage, and I am jealous, just to be honest. They have some user insight, like per user, per search, per impression insights that I would never have access to. And I don't have the ability to respond at that moment in time. I'm glad that they have the automations that they have, and they are powerful, but they're still going to need some input. They're still going to need some rule systems around it to say, this is a low margin product. You need to know it. Our target ROAS should be set up this way. This is a distressed housing term, and we can't say this because these are our credit terms that we will get sued because we're not abiding by Fair Housing Act. So I think that that's one of those places where there is a lot of space for both. I'm super happy to get to work alongside them. When I was thinking about this space, I've had the experience of getting to work with the InEngine for so long. They are my role models and they are my guiding star. I'm just looking at it from a slightly different lens of the efficacy of the operation side of an agency.
And let's shift the conversation over to artificial intelligence for a bit. And why not? Everybody's talking about AI. It's the hot topic, and there's a lot of information about it out there, some good and some whatever the opposite of good is. In your mind and at Fluency, how does AI fit into advertising execution? What can it do versus what can't it do?
I know when AI came out, I think, let me make sure I get this right, 2021 December, OpenAI kind of came to general public. I think that's about the right time. As an automation engine that had been running since 2017, we run into 2021 with this very, very impactful and cool new technology that comes out. We had to really think through where it fit into the space. Does it displace automation? Does it augment automation? Is it dead in the water? Like, we had to understand where that went. So I feel very fortunate. I get to kind of lead our research and development at Fluency. So I've spent a lot of time in this space. But I'm going to bet that at this point, almost everybody listening has tinkered with AI. They've all played with some things. What we have for AI, first of all, AI is constantly evolving. I see it every day. What didn't work yesterday seems to work tomorrow. And it's been a lot of fun to be along for the ride. We're really talking a lot about the large language models. And those large language models give you this human voice and can do some light decisioning. And it seems to be the most pervasive things. Now, there are other areas of AI that we could get into. And I've had the luxury of being able to dabble in some of those along with the team members here at Fluency too. There's some other cool spots, but LLMs are the one that everybody seems to be talking about. What we found is it's great at summarizing and providing a human voice to both text and data. There's a phrase that one of our engineers went to a conference, it's an AI conference, and the phrase that was said there was, AI lets you talk to your data like it's a person. And that's a pretty profound concept. If we were to layer that into the Fluency version, AI lets you talk to your advertising account like it's a person. Really neat concept. I find it very good for inspiration. If you've ever done this job and you've had to write a call to action that has to be 15 characters long, 250 times, you kind of run out of juice there over time. And it's nice to see some alternative ideas out there. Doesn't mean you want to take them all. Some of them are going to be garbage. I think we've all seen that. But you can still use that inspiration. It's great. What I found is it's not amazing at math yet. It's mixed results. So if you ask it math questions, it can get them wrong. And that can be pretty challenging if you wanted to really tell somebody some story that we're driven by metrics a lot in the advertising space. And if you can't do math, you have a little bit of a challenge there. I'm not saying that they can't do math. I can say that there are places where it will get that wrong. And that's the challenge with it, is it's kind of non-deterministic. It has its place and it has its differences from what we do with automation. Automation is very deterministic. If I were to give anybody one takeaway from this, advertising is deterministic. What you set up, you will get out. And this is like a factory line at an automotive production plant, right? You're going to churn out the same car over and over again. Now, we love the fact that you can customize it. You can get different colors. You can get different internal options. That paradigm holds true with the data-centric approach. But it will do what you told it to do. AI is a little less so. AI is going to bring some subjectivity into it. It's going to take some risks, and it's going to do some things that are a little bit different.
Well, on that note, automation and AI feel like they should be naturally complementary technologies. How do they complement one another?
When it's brought together, AI really does augment the automation story. I bet you everybody heard when I talked about that factory line concept. Everybody heard cookie cutter advertising. And I think that we've done a lot to try to mitigate that personally. Like, we have a lot of places where there's randomization and approved libraries, and that makes it feel different. You can insert variables for different client names over time. But if you really want to get a human voice, AI is extremely good at that. One of the other pieces that I find really interesting is the configuration and setup of automation is an upfront investment. You're building your workflows. If you thought about day zero, if you were to try to map out just on paper your flow chart for how your ad operations works, even that exercise takes some time. People will spend a lot of time just to understand how they operate today, what their core philosophies are, what do they do when the season changes in the HVAC community, when it goes from cold weather to warm weather, do you change your advertising strategy or not? And how do you do it? So mapping that all out can be pretty heavy. Now turning that into an automation set of rules can also be pretty heavy. Where AI can really come in is it can take a look at your existing processes and help you configure your automation very, very quickly. Now, then it turns into automation. So AI helps you to the spot where you get this non-deterministic piece, gets you to a spot where you're very close to your end state of deterministic advertising. And I hope that that word isn't like too nerdy, but just predictable outcomes. That's what I think we'll see in automation. And AI really does help you reduce that robotic feel. It's a really nice place where it feels like you're connecting with a person on a level that they would like to converse with. It's great for a back and forth. It's great for summarizing, interpreting that data, and actually giving you back something that you can take for action on in human speak, which is kind of nice.
As with any new technology, and probably more so than any other than I can think of in recent history. I mean, I don't recall 5G threatening my job security whatsoever, but, you know, AI has received more than its fair share of skepticism and concern from every corner of our industry. This is a two-part question related to that. The first part is, what do you think are the major real-world concerns that we need to be watching out for? And then two, what are the steps that brands and agencies can take to mitigate risk when working with AI?
The very first piece of AI I tried to roll out, it was just in a beta. It was just a light concept where I could get some inspiration for ad content, not automating ads completely, just helping somebody when they're going to write a writing assistant. And the very first thing that came back to me was, you're not using our data to power this, are you? And I thought that was a really interesting question because I'm a tech platform. I have data use rights within the Fluency walls, which means I shouldn't be sending it out to OpenAI. I shouldn't be sending it out to Gemini without my client's permission. And that was a learning. So we spent a lot of time and make sure we can mitigate that. So I think the first thing is understand your data use rights. The next thing was I was on a panel with somebody and I love one of the phrases that they said in that. It was kind of an interesting conversation back and forth. And they said, when I think about AI, I think about who's going to get sued if it's wrong. And not that I want to be like in that pessimistic mindset all the time. I definitely don't. But I think it's a valid question to think about who is responsible when a non-person is wrong, something that you're automating. So we have to understand where our appetite for risk is. There are places in advertising that are non-critical and wrong is, you know, varying degrees of wrong are okay. Like I would say lightly wrong is okay. I wouldn't want to lose all credibility with our clients at all. But, you know, if you were to summarize a report and your finding wasn't the ideal finding out of a large data set, it's probably low risk. So understanding what our tolerance for risk is probably the first thing that we should be paying attention to. Then getting into that data governance is the other piece. That's the first thing that I would think are real world challenges. I also would just highly recommend understand it has limitations. We just did a hackathon and it was kind of an interesting one. And I think the ideas that came out of that hackathon were incredibly brilliant across the board. So I even hesitate to tell the story, but I did notice that almost everywhere we had a pain point in our own business, the solution was throw AI at it. And I was like, I don't know that we're quite there yet. So we have to understand its limitations and we have to be cognizant of the fact that it is language and it is interpretation. When I first started working at AI, right here on this couch over next to me, my daughter was sitting next to me and she's an artist. She's very anti-AI in her like persona. And she's kind of telling me what I should do with it. She's barking orders at me. And I just said to her, I was like, Addie, you know, you remind me a lot of how I would interpret AI. You've got a lot of ideas. They're not all ones I'm going to listen to. So it's great that I have that inspiration. Some of those were amazing ideas. And some of them were just ones to discount. So I think if you think of AI like you've got your daughter sitting on the couch telling you what to do, and you still get to make your own decisions, I think you're in a great spot. As to the second part of your question, I think this is where automation really shines. You know, understanding rules like we talked about in that Fair Housing Act and or understanding, say, brand compliance requirements is key for any brand. So if you were to go to ChatGPT today and you can tinker with this, it gets better all the time. So this may be a point in time, but it wasn't that long ago. I just asked it for 15 ad text descriptions to describe a used Porsche. And three of those 15 came back with cheap or budget or deal, all things that are antithetical to the Porsche branding. They don't want that there. So this is where automation can really come in. One, it can do things like upfront dynamic prompting. So it can say, avoid these terms on the prompt side itself. It can be very conditional and say, for this specific client, these are the things that we don't want you to include in your responses. That's one side of it. So automation is great on that. But the other side is, we still don't know for sure that it's not going to come back with those terms. So we can scan that content. That's another great automation rule system that says, I'm controlling what I put into the AI. I'm controlling what I accept and outputs through these rule systems. I can be deterministic and know for sure that I'm covering the basis of what my rules are. So that's one of the great spots that we have for this. I also think that when we look at things that we can do and mitigate the risk in brands and in agencies, I think we'll feel it. If we want to center on that data set, like I was mentioning earlier, run our advertising from a core data set. A lot of times we don't have clean data. These tools are very, very good at taking a look at our data. But if we review it first, we can then use that AI side to normalize our data and the automation side take advantage of that data. It's a really nice complement between the two systems. It's relatively low risk and it saves a lot of tedium for people. It's very difficult even in automation to take a look at an unclean data set and then do something compelling with it. It takes a little bit of interpretation. Just anecdotally, I'll tell you that when one of our partners, they had 25 different ways that I saw the word Yamaha spelled. And you don't want that in your ad content. You don't want the wrong spellings in there. So finding these great spots to normalize data, detect patterns and fix them. Very, very good use case for AI. Because if you are in the mix in that automation side, you can then review its outcomes and say, now let me take advantage of the scalability of automation.
To close out this first episode, I'd like to end with something of a crystal ball question. I mean, you've been in the industry for quite some time. What do you think is just over the horizon for AI and automation in terms of opportunity and benefit?
Well, it's not really a new story, Richard. Efficiency is always in focus for businesses. Like, it's been like that forever. AI is this new version of potential efficiencies that we haven't had before. Digital advertisers have this really challenging job, in my opinion. And that this one of the reasons I'm drawn to this space. An advertiser is often a highly creative person. I've seen that. A digital advertiser has the requirements of being an incredibly technical person. We have to know how to do all those settings in Engine. What I see with AI is we can potentially augment the single seat, the single user, because that combination of incredibly creative and incredibly technical is rare. I mean, it's not impossible, but it's rare and it's hard to be both of those. I know the technical side really well. I can't write ad copy very well myself. But if I can augment myself with an agent, with a helper that can do the parts that I'm not familiar with, and I can really be there to understand what it wants to do and vet it myself and work collaboratively with it, I think that we're going to be in a great spot as far as a more efficient digital advertiser of the future. I went to the Gartner conference this year, and in that Gartner conference, they talked about this evolution of AI, and I do really lean into this philosophy, is that currently we think of AI as a tool. In the future, we will think of AI as an actor, a coworker, someone alongside you, a teammate that does their part, and together we solve these problems. So I think that we have the ability to be much more efficient and more effective and round out where we are weak with the augmentation of AI. It's definitely its promise. I would be hesitant to say that I think it automates away all of our jobs. I certainly hope not. I'd like to have a contribution in it. And I think that the innovation and inspiration will always have a space, because we're going to start to be able to feel what it feels like. We're already seeing it in the AI generated art. So I think we're safe there. I just would like to see us augment ourselves. Like I said, I'm not great at writing creative ad content, and it does a pretty good job there. It helps me where I'm weak. And I think there's an inevitability of us being side by side with the AI assistant in the future. Going back to that whole efficiency world, like, can you imagine if we were a digital agency today and we had never adopted computers, right? That was a disruptive technology too. But if we never adopted computers, today we would absolutely be out of business. We'd be hyper inefficient and we would just look antiquated. I just think that there's a version of this where we find the safe spot to help assist ourselves in the future as we go forward.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for taking part in this today, Eric, and we'll see you for episode 2.
Thanks so much, Richard.
That wraps up episode 1 of our 4-part mini-series. We hope you've enjoyed this episode. In our next episode, we'll be discussing how to scale a multi-channel strategy, the emerging channels you need to know, and how to operationalize them. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast at your podcast store of choice so that you don't miss episode 2 or any other upcoming episodes. Thanks for listening. And to learn more about Fluency, you can check them out at fluency.inc, where you can schedule a consultation, view case studies and automation, or use their free tool to help you calculate the time and cost savings you can experience with automation.